say.
Come on, you're fame. You're famous. You're the rock star CMO guy.
Thank you very much.
Hello and welcome to episode 95 of Rockstar CMO FM. The M is for marketing and the F is for whether you decide. As you're probably wondering, does the world need another effing marketing podcast? I'm your host, Ian Truscott, and this weekly podcast serves as my excuse to chat with marketing friends old and new that I've met through my career, from techie to CMO and trusted advisor, and hopefully share with you some marketing street knowledge that my guests and I have picked up along the way. Come say hello. We are Rockstar CMO on Twitter and LinkedIn. I'm recording this on Saturday, the 1st of January. Happy New Year, and I hope you are well, safe, and staying as sane as you feel you need to be. As I mentioned last week, something a bit different again this week. Robert and Jeff are both off. There are some small but exciting changes to the podcast for 2022 that I'll talk about in a moment. And I chat with digital marketing thought leader, influencer, author, speaker, and podcast host Jason Falls about influence, bourbon, and podcasts. Right. Let's get started, shall we? Firstly, if you allow me a little horn toot, the rather wonderful Drew Neiser, who you may remember was a guest a few weeks back, has written some kind words about this podcast. I've obviously plastered them all over our website and social feeds if you're interested in reading them. Thank you, Drew, for that. Back to this week. I had planned a retrospective and some best bits to round off the year, but I have some news to share. I'm delighted to announce that we've got invited to join the Marketing Podcast Network, which is thanks to you guys for listening and sharing, and of course to all our fabulous guests. It has meant some changes to the plumbing. Must have worked if you're hearing this. And you'll hear some ads, which is quite exciting, not just because they'll contribute a bit towards the costs, but as a marketer, I think it's a cool thing to play with and is the next step for our little show. If you hate them, please let me know. But to be honest, the biggest benefit is that we join a community, which is cool for me as I get to chat with other creators and gives our guests, contributors and friends of the show the bigger audience that I think they deserve. Anyway, Jason Falls is the man behind this marketing podcast supergroup, and we'll hear more about it when I chat to him in a bit, as he was kind enough to give me some time this week for an extended interview. So before we hear from Jason, let's give this ad thing a go, shall we? And this 1986 tune by Steinsky and Mass Media, We'll Be Right Back, has been playing in my head since we got this ad opportunity.
We'll be right back. After this word.
We'll be right back.
After this word.
We'll be right back.
After this word.
There we go, some ads. This marketing thing just might catch on. On to our guest. Jason Falls is a leading digital strategist, author, speaker, and thinker in the digital and social media marketing industry. He is an innovator in the conversation reach segment of social analytics, having published the first ever conversation report in 2012. An award-winning strategist and widely read industry pundit, Falls has been noted as a top influencer in the social technology and marketing space by Forbes, Entrepreneur, Advertising Age, and others. A 2014 Forbes article named him one of the top 10 business leaders all entrepreneurs should follow on Twitter, alongside Richard Branson, Mark Cuban, Tom Peters, and Tony Hsieh. He is the author of three books: Winfluence, Reframing Influencer Marketing to Ignite Your Brand; No Bullshit Social Media, The All Business No Hype Guide to Social Media Marketing; and The Rebel's Guide to Email Marketing. Falls is also noted for founding socialmediaexplorer.com, once recognized as the top marketing blog in the world according to Ad Age's Power 150. If that's not enough, he's just founded the Marketing Podcast Network. I hope you enjoyed this conversation. Hi, Jason. Welcome to Rockstar CMO FM. How are you?
Oh, so glad to be here, and love what you do and have listened to your show for quite a while now. So kind of fun to be a guest finally.
Oh, splendid. I mean, I've known you for years through social media, but it's only recently that we've chatted. So, and your book has just arrived, which I'm going to ask you about in a moment. But for the readers that haven't followed you, sorry, the listeners that haven't followed you for years like I have, tell us a little bit about yourself, Jason.
Well, sure. So I'm a PR guy by trade. Mm-hmm. And I live in Kentucky in the United States. And for the first 15 years of my professional career, I was a PR guy in college university athletics. Mm-hmm. So I basically hosted the press conferences after football, basketball, baseball games, things like that. And when my son was born 16 years ago, I decided I didn't want to travel as much because I was traveling basically 3 days a week, 9 months out of the year. Mm-hmm. And so I landed at an advertising agency in Louisville, Kentucky, called Doe Anderson. And they were the agency of record for Maker's Mark Bourbon. And nice. I had been playing on the internets with all of my sports PR, playing on MySpace and blogs and social networks and forums and message boards and things like that. And Doe Anderson's clients were like, we want to know more about using the internet. And I just happened to be there and kind of latched onto that and ran with it. Mm-hmm. And I like to say I was in the right place at the right time and I didn't screw it up.
I love that. And I mean, I was wondering where to start with your career and what I was going to ask you about and what you got into, what got you into marketing. And maybe we'll come to that in a minute. But we should really start with, tell us a bit about your existing agency, who you're with right now.
Yeah, I'm with Cornette now. I've mm-hmm. been there for a little over 4 years. And Cornette's a full service ad agency based in Lexington, Kentucky. But I like to tell people that we're an agency in Lexington, not a Lexington agency.
Right.
Because our clients are, you know, all over the place. They're mm-hmm. you know, typically either national or even some global brands as well. We work with Kemper Sealy and A&W restaurants in the States. And we've worked with, you know, some of the largest bourbons in the world. Nice. And continue to work in that, in the spirits category. So we're a full service ad agency. And then I oversee the, what I would call the earned and owned content. So PR, social media, influencer marketing, a little bit of organic SEO work. That's kind of my purview within the agency.
I love it. And when I was doing the research, I had a look at your agency website. I love the About Us page where it's just, it's not got pictures of you guys. It's just got pictures of the things that indicate what you're interested in, which is a different take on other agency websites.
It is really cool. They concepted that years ago before I got there, but essentially mm-hmm. when you are hired at Cornette, you are challenged with, okay, you need to come up with, you know, 10 or 15, 20 items that mm-hmm. sort of tell people who you are. And then they lay them out on the floor basically and take an aerial top down photo of these things laid out on a white, you know, square, and that's your about photo. And so I have a couple of bottles of bourbon and pictures of my kids and some books by Christopher Moore, cause he's my favorite author. And then I've got some CDs of my favorite music artists and some soccer or in your country, football scarves and whatnot. And, that's me.
I loved it. I loved it when I saw that. And that was a bit of an aside there. I wasn't preparing to ask you that question. So that's cool. But as I mentioned just now, your book's just arrived, mm-hmm. which is one of the things I wanted to talk to you about. So shall we start there with your book and your podcast? And your book is called Winfluence, and so is your podcast. What is Winfluence?
So Winfluence is my clever little, you know, word to describe basically using influencer marketing strategically. And that kind of goes into a question that comes after that, because when the concept of Winfluence to me is using the word influence without the R mm-hmm. as opposed to the one with the R. And the concept behind that is when you think of influencers today, and this is because the mainstream media, when they talk about influencers and influencer marketing, they typically look at the the rubbernecking, you know, the train wrecks, the bad things. This person faked this, or this person posed this, or this person bought followers, that kind of thing. So we've been led to believe, at least the people out there who aren't in the weeds of marketing like we are every day, have mm-hmm. been led to believe that influencers are superficial and they're not effective and you shouldn't use them, etc., because the mainstream has painted them into a corner.
Yeah.
But if you think about what you're trying to do, what's the verb? What's the goal? You're trying to influence. You're not trying to influencer. You're trying to influence.
Yeah.
And if you look at what your strategic goal is through that lens, I am practicing influence marketing. Now, all mm-hmm. of a sudden, the blinders come off and you're not thinking about Instagrammers and YouTubers and superficial, and you're not thinking about that corner. You're thinking about this wider perspective of who is going to influence the audience that I'm working with to take action. So that's kind of what Winfluence is doing. It's using influencer marketing in a much more strategic way.
Yeah, I love it. And I heard you talking on Douglas Burdett's Marketing Book Podcast, which is one of my favorite podcasts. And I constantly, and we're going to talk about podcasts in a bit. And I know you're a big podcast guy. And it's like, I don't know if it's the right thing to do. I'm always suggesting podcasts to people on my own podcast. So the competition are right here. Anyway, but I really love his podcast. And you were talking about, so you talked about a distinction between influence and influencer. But also, I love this phrase, the peace sign duck face influencers that you refer to. But for us, I mean, I work in B2B, and for us in B2B, is influencer marketing relevant? But I really like the point you were making about B2B. So tell us about that. How does influencer marketing work in B2B?
Well, I personally think that B2B businesses and brands have been doing influencer marketing really, really well for a long time. Because if you mm-hmm. think about software as a service companies, how do agencies, how do other business to business service providers and product companies market themselves? Well, they typically have thought leaders in the industry doing webinars that you sign up for, and that's a lead generation, you know, mechanism. Mm-hmm. And those thought leaders are influencers in that industry. Or they have someone, you know, write guest articles on their website, or they quote industry experts and influential people in the field in their industry reports that they put together. All of these are marketing mechanisms, and they're using influential people in that space. Again, we in the B2B world, we don't typically think of the term influencer, because mm-hmm. we've been led to believe that's an Instagrammer or a TikToker or a YouTuber. Mm-hmm. But an influencer, or someone who is influential in the B2B space, mm-hmm. could be an academic. It could be someone who is high up at another company in the industry that's, you know, related. Yep. Or it could be a blogger who blogs about that particular topic a lot, right?
Absolutely.
And so I think really, if you think back about webinars and seminars and white papers and speaking at conferences and things like that, B2B businesses have been doing influence marketing really, really well for a long time.
Right. Yeah. I'm going to have to drop the R off of my influencer marketing. So if I ever say influencer marketing during this conversation, you must pull me up. But I've always included that within analyst relations mm-hmm. and PR as well. And I think that traditionally in B2B, we've always thought of analysts as those influencers. But I think that you make a great point that influential bloggers, mm-hmm. Podcast hosts, folks like that, and now the new analysts and are kind of influencers, aren't they? And that's what you're going after.
They are. And if you think about it, I mean, you know, I said at the top of the show, I'm a PR guy by trade. And so to me, influence marketing is really just public relations with a wider lens, or media relations with a wider lens. You're trying to find who's that third party person who has trust in the audience that I'm trying to reach trusts them, and that I can work with to say, hey, will you tell your audience about X?
Yeah.
And it might be your product. It might be your company. It might be a perspective on a topic of the day. It could be a lot of different things, but it's really just finding that person who has an impact on the audience you're trying to reach.
Right. And from your perspective, it's not product placement then. It's about ideas as much as anything else when you're talking with your influence.
Yeah. And I think we're going to start to see one of the trends that I think we're starting to see now, and we'll continue to see in the broader context, B2B and B2C of influence marketing, is that the product placement, you know, the sponsored post, I think is going to kind of fade away. There are some verticals where it works really well. If you have a beauty or a fashion influencer that has hundreds of thousands of followers, and they wear some clothing item, or they hold a purse or something like that, then it sells a bunch of products. So there's going to be verticals where they still are relevant. But more and more, you're starting to see that consumers respond better to an influential person and their relationship with a brand over time. So when there's this constant reinforcement, they add frequency to go along with the reach, to use the old advertising term, right?
Yeah.
So instead of one-off sponsored posts, it's like, how can I partner with this influential person over time so that they consistently reinforce my product message to their audience?
Right. So it's a thoughtful strategy that you need to go with these influencers then. So as part of that as well, I've heard you talk about this too, is that when you're choosing influencers, it isn't just about followers, is it? Or about how many people they've got on Twitter or anything like that?
Not at all. In fact, I think that's another, you know, in the last year, 18 months or so, we've seen people, brands even turn away from that. It's not the number of followers that you're really worried about. It's how persuasive and impactful are you with the followers you have? And if you think about it this way, if for those in the B2C world who think about influencer marketing, they typically think about number of followers and engagement rate. Well, if you think about the math of that, if I have, and I'm terrible at math, so I'm going to make some numbers up here. So if anybody checks the math here, I'll probably be wrong. But if I have 100,000 followers and I have a 1% engagement rate, then that means I'm going to engage 1,000 people. If I have 10,000 followers and I have a 25% engagement rate, that means I'm influencing, I'm going to engage 2.5 times as many people. Right.
Yeah.
So it's really kind of doing the math to understand, okay, this person has accumulated a lot of followers, but how many of them are actually paying attention? And if you can triangulate that, now you all of a sudden see that that 10,000 follower person is way more valuable than the 100,000.
Yeah, absolutely. And how do you, and the other thing is, it's the people they influence as well, isn't it? It's making sure they're influencing the right audience for you. But how do you discern that? I mean, I've been running the podcast. This will be the 95th episode. Wow. And I've had a guest on most episodes, new guest on most episodes. And I found it really interesting about the different guests, about how many people have engaged with that podcast episode that have come via the guest. And some of the guests have huge number of followers or large number. No, I've never interviewed anybody with huge numbers probably, but large numbers of followers. And you think, oh, this will be a hit. And some people have very high numbers of followers, but very little engagement. How do you figure that out when you're choosing your influencers?
Well, especially in the B2B space, it's a little bit more difficult than B2C. In B2C, you know, you can use a lot of the influencer marketing software tools out there. Yeah. And so there's lots of good ones. I have a relationship with Tagger, which is one that I use. Yeah. And basically those go out and either, you know, collect via signups or collect via just scraping public data to say, who are all the people on Instagram that talk about this topic and how many followers they have.
Yeah.
And they're in a database and you can type in a couple keywords and figure out, okay, for the audience that I'm trying to reach, here's 100 influencers I can choose from. And then you can prioritize them however you like.
Yeah.
I always recommend that everyone go a step or two further, you know, get in there, analyze their content, you know, try to really understand who those influencers are and what they say and how engaging are they with their audience so that you can prioritize better. So it's not just the lists, but also investigating. But in the B2B space, a lot of times, like for instance, if I'm in the construction equipment world, right? And I'm trying to market construction equipment. Well, I can use a couple of those databases. I can look at, you know, top construction influencers as a Google search term, and I can find here's a bunch of people who blog about construction, and here's experts in the field, and here's the people who are quoted in the trade journals by the media. So that gives me a clue too. But I've got to triangulate a bunch of different information to know, all right, these five people are the most quoted. They seem to be the most trusted. They seem to be the ones who are constantly interviewed about this topic. So those are my five priorities.
Yeah.
And sometimes it takes, unfortunately, you know, there's no easy button in this. Sometimes you got to roll up your sleeves and do the work. And and that's how you do it.
Yeah, I mean, that's what I've always done in B2B, or worked with people that do the very same thing. You start off with some stuff that you can scrape using tools, and then you've got to dig into it. But the nice thing is for us, I mean, unlike B2C, the numbers are much smaller, right? I mean, we don't need to do so many deals. We don't need to sell so much product. Therefore, you know, we can, if you can find 10, 15 great influencers for a reasonable sized software company, as I'm used to, you're going to make some impact with that if you get the right people, right?
That's very true. And I think to your point on podcast guests, what's really interesting about that is, because I do the same thing on my influencer marketing podcast, is I'll have, you know, people who are experts about influencer marketing who work at agencies, and they're not necessarily out there blogging and podcasting themselves, but they practice the craft. So I'll have them on, and they'll tell everybody in the agency that they're on this podcast, and they'll tell their clients they're on this podcast. And all of a sudden I've got, you know, 40 or 50 people sharing and commenting on it. And then I'll go out and I'll find a, you know, a talking head in the industry who's a marketing expert and has written a couple books, and they'll tweet it maybe and I get like one person who cares.
So
a lot of times it's, and that's the difference sometimes between people who are influencers and people who are influential.
That's a good point.
And so sometimes those two worlds cross pollinate, and you have an influencer that does have a big impact. Mm-hmm. But it's really interesting on the podcast thing, and that's another thing. Blogging and podcasting are two tools and channels for influencers that the software companies don't measure. They don't they don't really include them. And so if I'm looking, all things being equal, I'm looking at an Instagrammer. And I've done this recently for a client. So I'm looking at an Instagrammer who also does YouTube videos, who has, you know, 250,000 followers. And then I've got another Instagrammer who does YouTube videos in this category, and they have 50,000 followers, but they have a podcast and a blog. Now I'm going to go research the blog and the podcast to see how much website traffic do they get and how many people listen to that podcast, because they may be a lot more impactful than the other. In fact, they probably are, because they're providing more longer form content.
Yeah, no, I agree. And the podcast thing is interesting. I mean, luckily I do this for the conversation rather than the fame. So
come on, you're fame. You're famous. You're the rock star CMO guy.
Thank you very much. And back to your process, and also back to talking about other people's podcasts, the Marketing Book Podcast. You shared, and this was an exclusive for Douglas. He was very proud of this. That you don't describe this in the book, apparently, and I haven't read it yet. I'll be completely honest, because it only arrived this morning. But you described your process with an acronym of PAVE, which made me laugh, because then you were like paving the way, and even you laughed at yourself. What does PAVE stand for? What is your approach?
So I don't actually call out the acronym in the book, PAVE, but the last piece of the book is talking about the purposes, the intentions that you'll use influence marketing for. And it's really trying to make sure that people who are still unclear on what influence marketing can be or is, it's trying to align it with things that we know, right? So the P in PAVE is to persuade, right? You can use influence marketing to persuade, which I align in the book with advertising. So yes, you can use influencers and influential people on the interweb or not on the internet, even offline folks, which we can talk about a little bit more in a minute, but you can use them to persuade your audience to take action, which is a lot like advertising, right? You're using advertising to persuade people to do something. The A is to associate. So it's not necessarily selling a product or pushing, you know, something, trying to persuade, but it's aligning and associating yourself. And that's really much more in line with public relations. So a good example of that is I want my brand to be aligned with and associated with someone like Matthew McConaughey, or maybe I want to align myself with someone who is out in front of a cause. Or I want to align myself with someone who is an influencer. Like, for instance, in one of the bourbon brands we've worked with in the past, we partnered with a gentleman by the name of Derek Wolf at Over the Fire Cooking. So his channels are all about how to grill outdoors, delicious food and whatnot. And we thought, you know what, his audience looks a lot like the audience we're trying to reach. So we partnered with him to align the brand with him. It wasn't necessarily, we didn't want him to say, hey, go buy this bourbon. We just wanted him to say, and when I get done grilling my steak, I'm going to have a sip of bourbon, and here it is. Right. So it's alignment. It's not necessarily pushing or persuading. So association is the A. B is to validate. And that's where I think there's so much opportunity that is not being taken advantage of by brands. Validation is kind of the ratings and reviews, right? You can engage influencers to rate and review you on various sites. Now, I stipulate that with the fact that the Amazons of the world do have terms of service that you don't want to violate. You're not supposed to pay somebody to go review your stuff on Amazon or a bunch of other sites. But there are sites out there where you can do that. And so you want to leverage those, but there's also your website. So why not have, you know, if you've got a ratings and review section, why not have some influential people not only come and rate and review you, but call those ratings and reviews out and use them as endorsers on your website, right? So that, that validation has a lot to do with it. And then the last one is to enthuse, to build enthusiasm around your brand. And I align that to word of mouth marketing. So, you know, seeding some information out there through influential people that get people excited about your brand, the events that you're involved with, the sponsorships that you have, et cetera. So PAVE, there you go.
I love it. But the other thing is, I mean, I'm listening to that with my B2B head on, and I think it's exactly the same. I think that, and I think sometimes in B2B, we're too hard to sell, you know, we're too quick to the sell. And I think some of those things where you're saying about association, which is a little bit more gentle, is much better. And I've also used content marketing to do a similar thing. So I've created off-brand web publications where you invite the influencers in to speak. They're happy to write for something that's off-brand, but they probably wouldn't for your own blog because they don't want to be seen as a shill for your product, you know, and your company. So I think that those two things seem to go hand in hand, the influencer marketing. But I need to pick up on a point you said we're going to talk about later. So I've made a mental note about offline influencers. And so little conversation happens on this podcast, I'll be honest with you, about offline and word of mouth and stuff like that. So tell us a bit about that.
Yeah. So I guess the best way to describe this, we did a case study at Cornette we did a few years ago with the University of Kentucky, which is obviously a college university in Lexington, Kentucky, where we're located. And we did it with their healthcare system. So their hospital, their medical school, that system of medical care is a big healthcare provider in central Kentucky. And we were launching a new advertising campaign, basically. And the way that we decided we were going to launch this campaign was with this sort of, if cinematographic is a word, then it was highly cinematographic. It was, you know, it was a 2-minute movie. And it was very well produced, well done. And the five storylines in the little movie followed the areas of care that University of Kentucky Healthcare specializes in.
Right.
So we had that to launch this campaign, and we wanted to inspire the audience to share their own University of Kentucky Healthcare story. But then we got to thinking, who wants to watch a 2-minute movie about a hospital? Right. It's just not a lot of people are going to get excited about that, even though the film was very, very well done. Very good. If I didn't have anything to do with the film part of it, but my team did a great job with it.
Yeah.
So we said, okay, here's what we're going to do. We're going to leverage influencers online and offline to get people to watch this film. And we're going to try to game the Facebook algorithm. So what we did was we were going to launch this film at 11 a.m. on a Tuesday, I think it was.
Yeah.
And we engaged some local and regional relevant online influencers to go to the video within the first 2 hours of it publishing, like it, comment on it, tell their UK healthcare story in the comment and share it. But we didn't stop with those influencers. We also went to the influential people. So we got the mayor involved. We got the president of the Urban League, which is a social, a civic organization. Right. We got a local dentist, a local real estate agent, the music director at the local Presbyterian church who was active in the arts community.
Yeah.
And the reason we did that is because we knew once people got to the comment section and saw everybody telling their stories, and they saw the influencers, which is great, but then they also saw, that's my dentist. I know that person. That real estate agent lives down the street from me. Now all of a sudden they started to see this is a big thing and I'm going to participate in it. So within the first, I think it was within the first 24 hours, we had, I want to say 40,000 views of the video. Within the first 30 days, we had 800,000 views. And Lexington, Kentucky only has 320,000 people. So we almost 3X the population in views of a Facebook video. And it was because, again, we combined that those concepts of influencers and people with influence and put them together.
Nice. And one of the other things that you talk about, and I'm sure you talk about in the book that I've heard you talk about on various podcasts doing my research, is about going into these things and knowing the purpose of why you're going to do it. I thought that was a really interesting point that you're making, that so much of what we do in marketing, it's like a tick box. Oh, we've got to do, you know, there's like a list of things, you know, if you're a B2B marketer, here's the things you need to do. Or if you're B2C, I'm sure it's the same. And it's, oh, we must do influencer marketing. It's the big thing.
Right.
What's your advice around that stuff? How do we, what should we do it? And why?
Right. You know? I'm glad you asked that question because, I mean, I've been doing this at least on the agency side and the services side now for almost 20 years. Yeah. And even back in the very nascent days of social media, which is kind of where I came into the business, from that point forward, I still have to remind clients and people that I talk to, you don't do it to do it. You do it to accomplish a business objective. Yeah. And so whatever you're doing, if you do not start with your goal, what is the goal? Why are we doing this? Why are we using this channel? What are we trying to accomplish? What's the benchmark that we're trying to reach? If you don't do that, then you are not planning to measure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And measurement is one of those things that everybody says, I have a hard time measuring the ROI of this, that, or the other. Yeah. Well, it's probably because you didn't plan to measure by setting your goal and making sure here's what I'm trying to accomplish. If you don't plan to measure what you're doing, start with your goal. I liken it in the book to getting to the end of the driveway with your family packed into your van and you're ready to go on vacation. And then you get to the end of the driveway and say, okay, where are we going?
Yeah.
You haven't bought tickets. You haven't, you know, arranged for somebody to feed the cats. You haven't, you know, you haven't packed your suitcases. You're just, you're just kind of wandering until you find something.
Yeah,
and if you don't plan to measure, if you don't start with your goals and objectives in what you're doing, then you're just meandering around doing things for no reason.
Right, right.
The great thing about planning to measure is saying, okay, here's what we want to try to accomplish. It's going to support this business objective.
Yeah.
So now all of a sudden you've got buy-in from above because you can connect the dots to what you're doing and the budget you need for it. And then you can say, and we think we're going to accomplish this, or based on our previous work, we know we can accomplish X. And so you have a benchmark to get to and or a goal to exceed. Mm-hmm. And then what you do in all that is say, let's say our goal is to drive more foot traffic and we're going to use influencers to do that. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, that might sound really complicated to people, but it doesn't have to be. What we're going to do is we're going to, the five influencers we're going to work with, or 50 or how many ever, we're going to ask them to tell people to go to our store and mention this, or use this coupon code, or download this thing to show on their phone, so that we can say definitively with these influencers, they told their people to go do this, and this many people went and did this. If you plan to measure, then you can set little data traps along the way to make sure that your KPIs are coming in, and then ultimately your PI, your performance indicator, that the PIs are coming in, the performance indicators, and your KPI, the one you care about, is actually being accounted for, so that you can know how you're doing and how you're progressing, and then ultimately be able to report back how you did.
Yeah, no, I like that. And I always talk about marketing, and I like that connection with the C-suite. I always talk about the fact that marketing is, you may disagree with this, is about doing three things, awareness, revenue, and trust. Mm-hmm. And that's because I like my own acronyms, right? And that that means that marketing creates art. Oh. And that you have to, as a marketer, connect whatever you're doing to one of those metrics and then demonstrate to the C-suite that you're doing those things. And the one they care about most, of course, obviously, is revenue. So, you know, you've got to get that connected. But also quite like about the fact that if you're planning, and is this okay, if you're planning and you notice that you can't attribute, but you go ahead anyway, that's okay, right? At least you know that you're consciously going and going, I'm not really sure, I can't attribute this. So that, I don't know whether you agree with this, but when somebody along the line comes along and says, what's the ROI on that? You can say, look, we planned this and we knew full well this was going to be a bit of a punt. Right. And we're going to see it down the line. We may see an uptick on something. What's your...
Yeah, I mean, honestly, I think that's what most people do. I think it's not perfect. You would rather have a plan and know what you're measuring and have a plan to measure and all that good stuff. But a lot of times, marketing these days, you know, especially if you subscribe to lean methodology and whatnot, and sometimes you got to throw it out there and test things. Yeah. And you're not going to know what the ROI is going to be. And by the way, ROI is a financial metric. Yeah. So if your goal is awareness, you cannot measure ROI because it doesn't equate to money, right? It equates to how many more people know about you than did before. Yeah. So I always like to tell people, first of all, if you're going to do it that way and you don't necessarily understand or have a mechanism to capture some return on investment, the money equation, then let's recontextualize how you report things. Let's say our return on this was not, and it's not an ROI, It's just our overall return. What did we get from this? And what we got from this was a lot more followers on this social network. What we got from this is an opportunity to talk to these people by getting in their inbox. What we got from this is we moved the needle on public opinion of this particular issue because we invested in informing the public better about it. Right. And that ultimately is going to have a trickle down effect at some point to your revenue, probably. But tying all those things together over the course of several years is very difficult.
And again, applying my B2B lens is, you know, if you look at some successful software companies like Drift, for example, they created a category of conversation marketing and conversation sales. And they could only do that by influencers picking up on that term. Now, they wouldn't have been able to measure that aside from, you know, they wouldn't have been able to measure that from a financial perspective, as you say. They would have been going, well, how many people are now talking about this new category that we've just invented? And I don't know whether it's true that they invented the category, but I became aware of it with those guys. But anyway, that's great. I mean, about influencer marketing, and I could talk to you about that all afternoon, but all your afternoon, all my evening. But if we switch gears a little bit, I also learned in my research that you like bourbon. You've mentioned it a couple of times. I think it's fantastic. So, and I normally, and Robert Rose isn't going to be on the show this week, who is our mutual friend, and he usually gives me a drink recommendation every week. What's your favorite bourbon? How do you like to drink it? And what should we be looking out for?
So I am one of those people who really and truly believes that the right way to drink bourbon is the way that's right for you. and the reason I say that is because I drink bourbon differently in different contexts. So like if I'm going to a football match and I'm going to tailgate with friends, I'm going to put a cheap bourbon in a stadium cup and then top it off with soda or something so that I can sip on it all day. And it's a mixed drink. Some bourbon aficionados would frown on that, but I think they're all stodgy in the hell with them. But typically I am a bourbon connoisseur in that I like to try new bourbons. And I like to discover, you know, new ones that might, you know, be worthy of buying a bottle and taking home and putting it on my shelf. And so the way that I typically drink a bourbon is a 2 ounce pour with at least a cube of ice or a splash of water to just loosen it up a little bit, allow it to breathe. And then I always tell people, if you're going to taste a bourbon, do not judge the bourbon on your first taste because your taste buds aren't used to it yet. Like get that first drink in there, slosh that around in your mouth, let your tongue burn a bit and get used to the taste. I usually wait until the third sip to really go, okay, what does this taste like to me? And that's when I can judge whether or not I like a bourbon or not. Now, I don't have a sophisticated palate, really. I can tell you whether it's soft or whether it's harsh or whether it's rye-based or wheat-based, because wheat bourbons are sweeter, a little softer on the palate. Rye-based is a little harsher. So I'm not going to be able to sit there and go, oh, there's cinnamon and nutmeg. I can't do all that. That's not me. But what I typically do is I say, okay, this one has a sweet taste. It has a, you know, I usually say it burns going down if it's, I call it hot, if it really burns in your throat. And if it's not, I call it smooth. So it's either hot or it's smooth. And there's some degree in there in between. So I'll say, this one's a little hot, but it's actually not too bad. Or this one's really smooth. I like this. Smooth is really good for me because I don't like the burn that much. But I will tell people, in my opinion, you know, this is, you know, a pretty smooth bourbon. It's got a nice kick and it's got a little, it's got a little belly bake. You know, when you a couple minutes after you've had a sip or two of it, your belly's kind of warm and you're like, oh, that's either I have an ulcer or that's doing something on that. What's whatever down there. But
I'm learning. I love this.
But I like experiment with a lot of my favorite bourbon is Elijah Craig. And that is because it's not necessarily because of the bourbon, although it's very good bourbon. But that's my dad's bourbon. And so when I started drinking whiskey, and reconnecting with my dad, who wasn't around when I was growing up, he drank Elijah Craig. So I drank Elijah Craig. And so it's kind of an emotional kind of connection. And I think a lot of people's bourbon stories are going to be stories that involve friends or family. And that's really why they love the bourbon. It's not necessarily this tastes better than that, because frankly, you have to have an incredibly sophisticated palate to tell the difference from one bourbon to another in most cases. There's going to be subtle nuances, yes, here and there.
Yeah, yeah.
And there's going to be extremes. Like Maker's Mark is a very good wheated bourbon. It's lower proof than some, higher than others, but it's a sweet bourbon. It's a good cocktail mixing bourbon. It's very smooth. And if you put Maker's Mark up against something like, let's say, I don't know, Knob Creek, which is actually made by the same company, but it's a much higher proof and it's much more scotch-like in that it's got a lot more grain to it and a lot more thickness to it. And it's rye-based. Those are two different extremes almost.
Right.
So there are differences, but at the same time, bourbon's bourbon, especially if you mix it, it doesn't really matter.
My bourbon story is through old fashions and particularly inspired by Mad Men, to be honest with you. So I'm going to have to look beyond my normal Woodfords then to try some of these other bourbons.
Well, fantastic. The Woodfords are great. Woodford Reserve Double Oaked is delicious. Yeah. I love that one.
Yeah.
But yeah, if you're going to do old fashions, the really good mixing bourbons are going to be mid 90 proof and down to 80 to 95, around in there.
Yeah.
Unless you just really like them hot. If you like them hot and with a lot of burn, then you can use the higher proof ones. But Elijah Craig's going to be good for that. Buffalo Trace is going to be good for that.
Nice.
Maker's Mark is going to be good for that. There's some really good bourbons out there for sure.
Nice. Well, I mean, the regular listeners are going to be surprised by me having an in-depth conversation about anything that isn't gin, because normally I have a gin and tonic on every episode. But that's really so I've learned a lot about bourbon. But back to the topic of podcasts and get us bit back to business. and particularly, we were talking about Douglas's podcast, but last month, you started the Marketing Podcast Network, and in a moment of madness, you've actually invited this little podcast to join. So tell us about the Marketing Podcast Network.
Yeah, so I was on like any other podcaster, the first few years that I was doing my podcast, I wanted to figure out how to monetize it in interesting ways, and I wanted to figure out how to grow the audience. And so a couple of years ago, I joined Jeffrey Hazlett's C-Suite Radio, which is a small portion of a larger business networking thing he's got called the C-Suite Network. Yeah. And there's a lot of value there. It's a great, place to go and connect with other business-minded people. But you pay a fee to be a part of the network and whatnot. And I was really only interested in the podcast part.
Yeah.
And my hope was that I would be cross promoted to all the other podcasts and that there would be a revenue share of the ad revenue, the ads that ran on our shows. And in a couple of years with the C-Suite Radio, I didn't really see either of those at a significant level. And again, that's not to say that there's not value in them or in C-Suite Network overall, because Jeffrey does a great job, but for what I wanted, it wasn't working. And so I just thought to myself, well, what can I figure out how to do this? Can I figure out how to pull together a bunch of like-minded podcasters into a network, create a revenue share that's equitable for everyone so that, we don't have the big people taking all the money and the little people not ever getting anything. Let's figure out a way to make it more communal. Can I do this? And I started just investigating and asking a few questions and researching the topic, and I figured out that I could do it pretty easily.
Yeah.
So I thought, well, I love doing this. So what better side hustle than something you love doing and something that I'm not only getting up trying to do something that I ultimately might benefit from, but my friends are going to benefit from too, the fellow podcasters that are in this community with me. And so that was the core concept and the idea. And I launched it in early November and, basically emailed about 10 or 15 people that I knew would be at least interested in the concept. And a couple of them were like, I'm in. I'll switch today. Let's do it. And so fast forward to now, we're about 45 days into this now. I've got 12 shows on the network.
Wow.
We're probably going to hit about 12,000 or so downloads this month, which is starting to get to the point where you can actually turn around and do direct sales on the ad network. But we also have it set up so that if you don't want to do ads on your podcast, you can still be in the Marketing Podcast Network. You don't have to do the ads. Yeah. You pay a small fee so that it offsets your hosting cost.
Yeah.
But the big benefit of the Marketing Podcast Network is we actually automatically cross-promote one another.
Yeah.
I have every podcaster record a little 30-second promo for their show. Mm-hmm. And then your promo gets played to all the other podcast audiences. Mm-hmm. So we're supporting each other. We're going to do monthly calls to do mind share and brainstorm ideas to grow and all that good stuff. And so building a little community of marketing podcasters here so that we can turn around an audience to advertisers that makes more sense, and therefore we can charge a higher CPM rate to.
So, I mean, that sounds fantastic. So what are the other, I don't know if you can name all 12, but who are the other podcasts in the network?
Well, sure. Well, we're led off by the Rockstar CMO FM podcast, which you may have heard of. I have two shows on the network. Winfluence, the Influence Marketing Podcast, is kind of my primary podcast, but I also host a podcast that's an interview show for Cornette called Digging Deeper. Which I do weekly as a live stream, and then we pull the audio off as a podcast, and it's more of a marketing strategy, creative strategy conversation. Yeah. So there's that. We also have Matt Bailey's Endless Coffee Cup. He's kind of a business entrepreneur, marketing guy, runs an agency that's kind of baked into the SEO world. But he does a discussion conversation show called Endless Coffee Cup. We also have Seth Goldstein, my buddy out of Philadelphia, has a great show on entrepreneurship called Entrepreneur's Enigma. And then he also has a digital marketing dive podcast. And so both of those, he's got two shows on the network, and both of those are really good shows to listen to. Hanson and Hunt is one of our newest addition. People in the PR space, the comms space, probably know Eric Hanson and Kevin Hunt. Kevin is an executive at General Mills. And Eric is owns an independent agency in Minneapolis, and they do a monthly conversation about kind of the world of PR and comms in mostly in the United States. But really smart guys, really good podcast. We've got one called Copy Arena, which is Tanya Daka. She's a copywriter, and she basically teaches small businesses mostly how to write emotional, copy that persuades people. And so very niche, but incredibly useful to people who want to know more about copywriting.
I think that niche thing you just mentioned, though, hopefully we'll get you back on the show and we can talk about podcasting, but finding your niche is an important part of it, isn't it?
Absolutely. And that's where Tanya has done. I mean, she is just a dyed in the wool copywriter, and that's all she ever really talks about. And so again, one of the inspirations for Marketing Podcast Network was, well, she's got this marketing podcast that's so narrowly focused. She's never going to have thousands of downloads to be able to monetize that with any sort of ad revenue. But if we all collectively get together, then it's going to balance out, and we can probably do that. So that's kind of one of the things about it. Real quickly, the other ones, one of your fellow United Kingdom folks, Gordon Glenister, he's the Influence Global podcast. So he's another influencer marketing guy. Dave Delaney does a great show called The Nice Podcast. And Dave's show is kind of an internal comms, internal motivation guy for businesses and brands. And so he basically teaches companies how to be nice to their employees. and so his podcast is all focused on that. And then Nick Westergaard has a great branding podcast called On Brand. And he's been around for quite some time and is probably pretty well known in the podcasting world, at least in the States. Got a couple really great books. So I think that rounds it out. There might be one more in there that I'm forgetting, but I think that's it.
I hope not. And I hope they're not listening and they hear you miss some of
them. Well, by the time this thing airs, I'm hoping we got two or three more that I didn't mention. Yeah. So we're growing every day.
Yeah. And I know that I'm going to ask you about your links in a moment, but where can people find Marketing Podcast Network?
So the website is marketingpodcasts.net. And then we are also on LinkedIn. The Marketing Podcast Network is on LinkedIn. So you can just search for us there.
Splendid. Right. So on to my last couple of questions. The first one is we have a regular feature, the Rockstar CMO Swimming Pool, our portal to hell, all the snake oil BS and overhyped trends that plague this marketing craft we love. What would you throw in the Rockstar CMO Swimming Pool?
So in terms of the overhyped stuff, I'm going to throw this one out there with an asterisk because I'm a little bit of a contrarian and a skeptic. I think that all this talk about the metaverse, Right now, for now, is a lot of hype. When I see these virtual worlds and the Oculus experiences that people are talking about, everything leads right back to Second Life for me. You know, in 2006, Second Life was interesting for, you know, the 1% of the 1%, the people who could afford the right technology to be able to experience it the way it should be experienced. And B, who were, you know, tech savvy enough to do it. And I think certainly technology has caught up with us in a lot of ways. Most people have, you know, faster connectivity. You can experience a lot of this on your phone, and phones, smartphones are pretty ubiquitous now. But I still think there's, we're building a virtual world for the 1% of the 1%. I don't think this is going to be a mainstream thing for a while. And so, however, I do think that creates an opportunity for brands to create, to fill the gap, because you're going to have the tech nerds and the wealthy who can afford Oculus headsets and can afford to spend time in these worlds that are going to be there. And then you're going to have all these other people down here at the bottom who either can't afford it or don't have the access to it. Yeah. So it's an accessibility gap. Brands might be able to fill that gap. And the way that I sort of equated that in one analogy I've used before is, if I don't drink coffee, so I don't go to Starbucks. It's not an experience that not a brand that I use. Nothing against them. Just don't, I don't go there because I don't drink coffee. If, however, Starbucks all of a sudden started offering Web 3.0 or metaverse experiences with some sort of virtual cafe where I could go in and actually, I didn't have to buy an Oculus headset and I could experience something cool there or conduct a business meeting in this virtual world there. Okay. Maybe I go to Starbucks more than never. And that might be an entry point. And maybe it's not Starbucks. Maybe it's some other brand. I feel like brands have an opportunity to bridge that gap, but I also think we're a good decade away from this being, and I don't even really know what it looks like, to be honest with you. But I think we're a good decade away from this being more than the 1%.
I like that analogy. I like that story because it's the, you know, it's like the early days of the web, right? When people couldn't afford to get high speed internet connection. So that, so web cafes existed. They don't exist anymore, but I'm not in, certainly not in my town. I mean, I'm sure they do in areas where there isn't good connectivity in other parts of the world, but, and you know, now, only now that things like Zoom and video chat have become mainstream, right? Because they've been forced because of the pandemic. It's the only way we can talk to our families. You're right, though. It's going to take a while before, you know, my mum and dad are going to be wandering around the metaverse, hopefully. So, that's I like that point. Or, like you say, the people that can't afford the equipment and stuff. So that's a good point. So we'll chuck the metaverse into the Rockstar CMO swimming pool, which is a good start to the year, I think. So my final and bonus question, really. Normally, I play a track every week on Rockstar CMO. Well, I play at least a small part of the track, enough not to get sued, I hope. So what track gets your Monday morning marketing mojo working?
You know, I'm on a Beatles kick right now because of the Get Back documentary on Netflix, which I've watched twice already. I think it's fantastic. And that Let It Be album, for me, there's so many good songs on there, but I've Got a Feeling is the one that is my current earworm. And I can't let it go. I just keep, you know, I got a feeling. I just keep singing it. So.
I love it. I love it. I Got a Feeling by the Beatles. Splendid. So I'll be playing out with that. And when the listeners spin the dial on the interwebs, where are they going to find you, Jason?
Jason Falls everywhere. It's on all the social networks, jasonfalls.com, certainly marketingpodcasts.net as well. You can find links to the podcasts that I do on both of those sites. And then certainly Cornette's links are there too. And just to point out, Jason Falls is not a very common name, but there is a local politician in Cleveland County, North Carolina, who hates me because he cannot get on the search results. That's what you get for not being on the internet sooner.
Yeah, well, I compete in the UK with a high level judge, a QC, on the first page of Google. I'm normally beating him, but he's my Google first page nemesis. Yeah.
For the longest time, there was a YouTube video of former bassist for Metallica, Jason Newsted, falling on stage. And so the title is Jason Falls on Stage. And so I knocked that thing off the front page of Google after a few years, finally. I think it's still out there, but other than that, the first few pages of Google are all me.
Nice. Well, thanks very much, Jason. I'm looking forward to talking to you very often as we're now collaborating on the Marketing Podcast Network. And thank you very much for the invite and for me joining. And I hope the listeners enjoy the ads and this new experience that we're going to have together. So, and I look forward to speaking to you soon. Cheers, mate.
To you too, Ian. Thanks.
I've got a feeling deep inside. Oh, yeah. I can't hide, oh no, no, oh no, oh no, yeah, yeah, I'm gonna be angry. Oh, please believe me, I'd hate to miss the train.
And that was I Got a Feeling by the Beatles from 1969. Thank you, Jason. I really enjoyed that conversation. And maybe I'll be switching to bourbon for my normal gin. So that's a wrap on episode 95 of the Rockstar CMO Effing Marketing Podcast. Thank you for dropping a dime into your podcasting jukebox, selecting our track and jiving along with us. I've been your host, Ian Truscott. Thanks again to Jason for sharing his insight. And please follow him, say hello, check out the Marketing Podcast Network, and I'll put links to all the things we discussed in the show notes, which you can find on your favourite podcast app or at rockstarcmo.fm, where you can also find all our previous episodes. So, does the world need another Effing Marketing Podcast? Let us know. We are rockstarcmo on LinkedIn and Twitter. And why not be like Drew and drop a nice rating or review in your favourite podcast app? Or just keep listening. I'm glad you're here. Next week, I'll be chatting with Stan Bernard about his book, Brands Don't Win. Robert will be back in the Rockstar CMO virtual bar. And I may track down Jeff after his travels. Until then, I've been your host, Ian Truscott. I hope you'll join us again next week here at Rockstar CMO FM.
You may know you're listening to this show along the Marketing Podcast Network, but did you know there are other great shows on MPN to help your business? Christy Heiler hosts a fantastic podcast called Own It. Christy, tell us more about the show.
Own It is all about celebrating women and non-binary advertising agency owners. We talk about buying out of the Boys Club of Advertising because less than 1% of ad agencies are owned by women.
And where can people subscribe?
You can find the podcast at untilyouownit.com. We're also on the Marketing Podcast Network at marketingpodcast.net. And of course, you can subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.
You heard her. Go subscribe.
This podcast is heard along the Marketing Podcast Network. For more great marketing podcasts, visit marketingpodcasts.net.